Our first session is lessons learned from developing a climate change report, as well as a brief update on climate-related developments in global insurance markets. The TCFD framework is a widely used reporting framework by many companies across the globe. This was used to develop Old Mutual's first climate report, and Marlene will share some thoughts around the process followed and the insights gained. Given the developing nature of the sustainability field, the process is iterative and areas for future focus and development will be highlighted. The presentation will also provide a brief overview of some of the global learnings, focus areas, and developments relating to climate change and sustainability, with a focus on insurance and the UK market, which will be presented by Elsa. Our speakers for this session are Marlene Jordan. Marlene was a tax professional for most of her early career. She has been with the Old Mutual Group for 13 years, and in the last 4 years has been specializing in external reporting. She was responsible for putting together the first sustainability and climate reports for the Old Mutual Group in 2022, and currently leads up the team that produces the external reports, including results and the full annual reporting suite. Elsa Basil has a wealth of experience in the financial sector, both in the SA and in the UK. She started her career at Old Mutual South Africa before moving to the UK, where she predominantly worked on strategy and M&A for Old Mutual PLC. Following that, she joined Swiss Re London as a client manager and marketing actuary in their L&H division. After 12 years in the UK, Elsa returned to South Africa, where she was the managing director of Allmart, a lifestyle captive insurer in the Old Mutual Group, for 5.5 years. At the end of 2021, Elsa joined the internal consultancy unit at Old Mutual. I will now hand over to Marlene and Elsa to share their presentation, and we'll take questions after.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. A wicked problem, I think, you know, it's clear to me reading the term. I think the more I read about climate change and the more I see the complex and interconnected nature of the problem, the more the description of a wicked problem makes sense to me. There's no determinable stopping point, and the more you try to solve, the more it reveals and creates new problems. There's been lots of presentations in the past about sustainability and climate change. Last year, Phoenix Life at this seminar presented some of the learnings Phoenix Life in the UK around their reporting and initiatives around climate change. Pamela also presented last year at the ASSA seminar, an award-winning presentation that I would recommend you go and watch. That's a very good introduction into climate change. It's still available on YouTube. And I do expect there to be many future presentations on the topic. Many deep dives, and there's certainly more experts in this room than Marlene and I confess to be. We really see ourselves as students of the topic, so please note that. And I can also just note that even the experts in this field note themselves as students. Personally, the more time I've spent studying the topic, the less I feel I know. We really encourage comment, observation, and discussion at the end of this presentation. So these are the topics we're going to cover today. Pamela introduced the TCFD framework. There we go. Pamela introduced the TCFD framework last year, and when we started preparing for this presentation, it felt it would be really good to share some practical experience of engaging with the framework. And we're delighted that an accountant agreed to was prepared to venture into the actuarial field. So well done, Marlene. She was responsible for producing the first standalone climate report for Old Mutual in 2021. And she will share some of her experience, insights, and areas where she thinks require future consideration. As mentioned, we are really students in this field. Last year I completed the IFOA course on climate change and sustainability, which I found quite useful. It's also an indication of my age that I still qualified in the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries and could do the course. I also used the opportunity recently to speak to quite a few of the consultants, reinsurers, and people in the industry in the UK to get a sense of key developments there. That was quite insightful. So we will briefly touch on the UK, some regulatory developments and focus areas, then specifically around some of the scenario exercise that was initiated by the Bank of England in the UK. And then on the life and health side, we often focus on the asset side and liabilities is reserved for the P&C actuaries. But I think there's quite a big impact on health, an emerging field to consider, especially probably in South Africa. So we'll briefly touch on that. And then ending with just what is the SA context and what does it mean for actuaries in the South African market. With that, Marlene, over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. And thanks, Elsa, and thanks for welcoming me into the actuarial fold. It's an intimidating place for an accountant to be. I want to reiterate what Elsa said. I'm not a climate expert by any stretch of the imagination. And I also want to make it quite clear up front that at the time I was asked to collate and put together Old Mutual's first report, the group was already addressing our exposure to climate change quite extensively. A task force had been established to coordinate the climate efforts from teams across the group, and our risk community was leading the charge on understanding climate change risks and opportunities and the impacts on our group. My job was therefore to pull together the work that had been done into the TCFD reporting framework. So not having engaged with the framework at that stage, what I was expecting was an exercise of understanding some reporting requirements and applying that to the work that had been done. So a kind of a tick-the-box exercise. But the more I engaged with the framework, the more I realized that applying this framework is a lot more than just a tick-the-box exercise, and I'll share some of those thoughts and learnings with you. And I also just want to say that we've just published our second climate report, hot off the press. We published that last month. So first of all, just to contextualize where climate change fits into the overall sustainability agenda, you'll all be aware of the huge focus on sustainability from stakeholders, including investors, activists, customers, potential customers, and our employees. The terminology in this field has evolved a lot over time. We speak about responsible business, we talk about shared value, we link sustainability to the UN Sustainable Development Goals, and then an increased use of the ESG framework where we look at sustainability matters under the buckets of environment, social, and governance. There have also been a lot of reporting frameworks that have emerged over the last couple of years, and there's been a lot of issues around who's reporting under what frameworks, and none of these have been compulsory reporting. We're hoping to see some convergence in the reporting with the establishment of the International Sustainability Standards Board by the IFRS Foundation. This board recently, last year I think, issued two exposure drafts, the one dealing with general sustainability disclosures and the other with climate. And we're expecting these to be released as standards later this year. The last few years has also seen the emergence of a large number of sustainability indices, and these indices seek to evaluate the sustainability performance of companies. The indices tend to have slightly different focuses, so some of them will have more weighting towards environment matters, and some of them will have more weighting towards social matters. The important thing to note about this is that the measurement against these indices, so the index providers, rely heavily on publicly available information, which underscores the importance of sustainability reporting as investors start using these indices more and more in their investment decisions. For the rest of this presentation, I'm going to be focusing only on the practical aspects of climate reporting, which is one of the components which sits under the E in the ESG. A high-level overview of the climate change context is appropriate as a backdrop to a TCFD discussion. So in terms of the science, the important points to remember are if we take no action, temperatures are predicted to increase to 4 degrees above pre-industrial levels by 2100. We also know from the scientists that in order to avert extreme climate change, temperature increases need to be limited to 1.5 to 2 degrees. The scientists further tell us that in order to achieve this, greenhouse gas emissions have to be net zero by the year 2050. The global political response to what the scientists have told us has resulted in the conclusion of the Paris Agreement at COP21, which relies on the signatories to achieve their NDCs contributing to the net zero imperative. In terms of the South African context, there's some specific points that we always need to bear in mind. As a country, we have an extremely high level of dependency on fossil fuel-based energy, which makes comparatives to our European counterparts a little bit difficult. There's an imperative also to ensure that our transition to a low-carbon economy is a just transition, considering social issues as we move away from coal, given that these industries support many local communities. The financial sector plays a crucial role in enabling the transition to a net-zero economy. This sector controls a large portion of investment assets and can deliver on net-zero commitments on asset portfolios through active stewardship and integration of climate factors into investment decisions. This will drive real-world outcomes in the underlying investee companies. The private finance sector also has a significant role to play in mobilizing and directing climate finance. Another important building block is understanding how emissions are measured and reported on. So the Greenhouse Gas Protocol is a standardized global framework for greenhouse gas measurement and emissions. Entities report their emissions to the CDP in terms of this protocol. The protocol categorizes emissions into three scopes. So scope 1 and 2 are those emissions that are directly controlled by the company. Scope 3 emissions are indirect downstream and upstream emissions. So for a company to calculate your own scope 3 emissions, you require a lot of data in relation to the scope 1 and 2 emissions of the parties in your value chain. So as an example, business travel, this is an upstream scope 3 category. And so when you report your scope 3 emissions from the BA flight that you've taken for business purposes, this is derived from BA's underlying scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. For insurers, the biggest impact on carbon emissions is in their downstream investment activities. In order to calculate the scope 3 emissions inherent in an investment portfolio, you require detailed data in relation to the investee company's scope 1 and 2 emissions. To date, where emissions reporting has been mandatory, it's mostly been in relation to scope 1 and scope 2 emissions, but there's a greater push towards more disclosure of scope 3 emissions. This creates a challenge due to the availability of data and methodologies for calculating the attributions of scope 3 emissions. The TCFD has broad appeal as a framework. We see this, it's forming the basis for many of the emerging reporting frameworks, including the ISSB standards, which I alluded to. The reason that it has such broad appeal is because the conceptual model, together with the disclosure themes, they're practical and logical, and they actually are applicable to how any well-run organization should be responding to any risks and opportunities that they face. So the conceptual model is all about understanding what are the risks and opportunities facing your company. It gives you some definitions which are specific to climate. There's specific transition and physical risk definitions with subcategories, and then there's subcategories in the opportunity section. And what the conceptual model essentially says is that you need to identify what are the physical and transition risks facing our company and what are the opportunities? And then to assess the impact of those on your business, so your strategic planning and your risk management processes. And then ultimately to understand what will be the financial impact if these risks materialize. So it's important to note that the initial disclosures are pretty high level and qualitative in nature. So you may disclose some of your risks, but you won't know the quantitatively yet what the financial impact is. But you should be saying qualitatively which parts of your income statement and balance sheet they will be affecting. The process that was followed at Old Mutual, and this was run by our risk department, we ran a series of workshops to identify what are the physical and transition risks that we face across the group. And these workshops were run by climate experts and were held with senior leaders across the group. And these served a dual purpose. On the one hand, it allowed us to get the risks, but it also served as a training platform into the business, as it's extremely important that the business engages with and understands these risks and opportunities that they face. So the outcome of this process was a good deal of engagement, capability building, and then an initial list of what are the risks and opportunities that face our group. And how this is translated into our climate report is in our strategy section, we provide a high-level overview of the top transition and physical risks. So to give you some examples, under acute physical risk, we disclose that we foresee the risk that there's a rise in insurance payouts due to an increased frequency and intensity of extreme weather events. We're already seeing the impact of this in the increase in catastrophe events in our short-term insurance business. You're also required to disclose what are the mitigating factors that you're putting in place. So it really makes you start thinking about what are you doing to address this risk? How are you looking differently at your products? An example of a chronic physical risk is looking at the risk that adverse climate events result in health-related illnesses affecting mortality and morbidity over the longer term. Elsa will give some more insights from the UK on this particular risk. Under transition risk, the subset policy, there's a risk that policy shifts lead to stranded assets that result in asset devaluations from highly exposed industries. So the obvious one that we think about here is fossil fuel investments, but one needs to think a bit broader. So take an example of the emerging UK regulations and policies where they're phasing out petrol and diesel cars. These are transition measures as a result of climate change. So depending how well these industries respond to these regulations, this could also impact on your stranded assets considerations. Another category that I want to give you an example on is reputation. We're seeing an increased risk in litigation for the funding of fossil fuels. You may have noted in the media that the French company BNP Paribas is being sued by climate activists for funding fossil fuel development. So this is a real emerging risk that we need to consider. In relation to opportunities, we took a decision not to disclose the opportunities that we identified through our workshop processes, as these are essentially a potential competitive advantage. And it's interesting to note that the ISSB, as part of their consultation process, they received similar feedback that disclosing opportunities could ultimately be price sensitive. So they're looking at building in exemption from the disclosure, certain exemptions. I've had a look at some of it and it seems quite technical. Not sure how easy it's going to be to apply for those exemptions, but that's something that we need to keep an eye on in terms of how that develops. So in our climate report, instead of disclosing our future climate opportunities, what we disclosed were those opportunities which we're already capitalizing on. So examples are we report on our low-carbon, socially inclusive investments, which we measure under our own in-house developed green economy taxonomy. We also provide details around climate-focused investment products which have been developed, and we provide some case studies of our renewable investments. So the disclosure recommendations in the TCFD are structured around four key themes. I'm sure you've all seen this diagram before. The overall guidance that's provided is applicable to all sectors, and then there's supplemental guidance that's provided for certain sectors. In the financial sector, there are four supplemental guidance. There's one for banks. There's one for insurance companies. The insurance companies' supplemental guidance asks how insurance companies are evaluating and managing climate risks and opportunities in their underwriting activities. So this supplemental guidance deals specifically with the liability side of insurance activities. The investment activities are covered under the third supplemental guidance, which is for asset owners. The supplemental guidance recognizes that asset owners bear the potential physical and transition risks to which their investments are exposed. They sit at the top of the investment chain and have an important role to play in influencing the companies in which they invest. The fourth supplemental guidance is for asset managers. So the first theme of the TCFD is the governance theme. This theme requires you to state how is climate change governed within your organization. At Old Mutual, we were fortunate our chairman, CEO, and CRO had been very proactive, and the board had already been engaged fairly extensively on climate change. So our first report was essentially documenting this oversight and how we had started embedding climate change into our organization through the Climate Change Task Force. Our second climate report expands this disclosure to describe how we are embedding climate governance into our investment committee processes. Next, I'm going to talk about the risk management theme. Insurance companies have well-established risk management processes, and this theme is essentially asking you to describe those risk management processes particular to climate change and how you integrate these into your overall risk management processes. In our report, this section would have included explaining the workshop processes that we followed in order to ascertain which are those risks that are important to us. In relation to our asset owner disclosures, we also describe how we have integrated climate risk into our investment decision-making processes. So the reason I speak to risk before strategy is that the strategy section is essentially providing the output from your risk processes. So we debated this point internally with our CRO and agreed that we would also follow this flow in our climate report, as in our view, this supports a better flow of the narrative. So you first talk about what are your risk management processes, and then in the strategy section, you need to disclose what are those actual risks and opportunities that you've identified. You also need to disclose the time horizons over which they will potentially arise, as well as the impact on your business, including the expected financial impact. So you can see how what we saw on the conceptual model on the previous slide comes together in the strategy section of the actual report. And again, I reiterate, the disclosure will necessarily initially be high level and qualitative, with a view to iterating the process and refining disclosures as you gain a better understanding of the potential impacts over time. In the strategy section, you're also required to describe the resilience of your strategy, taking into account different climate scenarios. Again, the initial disclosures will be very high level in nature. The disclosures and early reports are not about showing an actual result of the outcome of applying the scenarios, but rather about describing what you're doing and how you're thinking about incorporating scenario analysis into your forward-looking risk assessments. So in the case of insurance companies, this will include how you plan to include scenario analysis into your own risk and solvency assessments. The metrics and targets section is, in my view, the most challenging of the themes. There are essentially three aspects that you need to include in this section. The first part is disclosing your organization's actual emissions, so your scope 1, 2, and the appropriate scope 3 emissions. This must be done in terms of the greenhouse gas protocol, which allows for aggregation and comparability across jurisdictions and organizations. So for organizations already reporting emissions to the CDP, this doesn't pose too much of a challenge, this part of the disclosures, other than potentially increasing your scope 3 disclosures. The second thing that you need to disclose in this section is you need to identify metrics used to assess climate-related risks and opportunities. So these metrics need to align to those risks and opportunities which you've identified under the strategy theme. This requirement poses a bit more of a challenge, and in terms of reporting maturity, one will only be able to report and disclose on these, as you refine your thinking about your identified risks and opportunities, and you iterate your understanding of their impact. The third requirement looks at disclosing targets used by your organization to manage climate-related risks and opportunities. So we think about this separately. We think about our operational carbon footprint separately to our investment carbon footprint. So since Old Mutual is a member of both the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance and the Net Zero Asset Manager Initiative, our target setting in the investment space aligns to these initiatives. In line with NZOA, we focus on engagement targets, sub-portfolio emission targets, as well as financing transition targets. On the sub-portfolio emission targets, we've started the process of analyzing the carbon footprint and implied temperature rise in the listed assets in our proprietary portfolios. So the reason we start with the listed portfolios is this is where the data and methodologies are the most advanced. Ultimately, as data becomes available, we intend to expand this analysis to other asset classes. However, setting targets against these metrics is challenging, due to the lack of data and suitable local benchmarks. So we use service providers to help us calculate these metrics in relation to our portfolios, but the benchmarks that these service providers provide us with are mostly European-based. So these are not really useful for us to assess our own performance. As we mentioned earlier, in the South African context, our investee companies are much more heavily fossil fuel reliant than their European counterparts. So there's a lot of work required in this area to establish local benchmarks which are specific to the South African context, and this requires serious collaboration across the industry working together with government. To assess the effectiveness of an organization's response to climate change, forward-looking analyses are required, which make scenario analysis an important tool for organizations in this space. So there are various publicly available scenarios which all deal with the interplay between physical and transition risks. The table at the bottom of this slide shows three of these publicly available scenarios, and how they map more or less to one another. So on the far left, we see business as usual. So this scenario assumes that we do nothing and emissions continue rising at current rates. The NGFS calls this the hothouse world, and Bank of England calls this the no additional action. That's their name for that scenario. So in this scenario, businesses are severely impacted by the physical impacts of climate change. So the physical risks are high on the far left of the spectrum. Then on the far right, we have aggressive mitigation. The NGFS calls this the orderly transition. Bank of England calls it early action. So this is where the action is sufficient to bring emissions down that we are within the Paris-aligned 2-degree world. In this scenario, businesses are impacted more severely by policy changes, less so than by physical climate impacts, and the transition risks are higher on the far right side. Elsa will be talking a bit more about the practical implications of these scenarios, particularly referencing some UK experiences. So before I hand over to Elsa, I just want to share a few high-level key learnings. So the one is that applying the TCFD framework is a process not about meeting reporting requirements, but about understanding the impact of climate change on your business and how you will address that. Engaging with a framework is valuable for creating awareness, capability, building, and engagement. There's a great need for expertise in understanding the data requirements and calculation methodologies and interpreting the outcomes. This expertise is built through engagement with a framework and other available resources. The biggest learning for me is that you just need to start the process and not be put off by the seemingly overwhelming list of requirements and a desire to show outcomes in your initial reports. The process is iterative. It's designed to be iterative, and the framework is designed such that your disclosures will improve as you iterate the process and refine your understanding of your specific risks and opportunities. Climate change is a collective societal problem. In order to solve this problem, there's a need for collaboration across industries, professional bodies, the private sector, government, and regulators. I'm going to hand over to Elsa now, who will expand on some of these concepts.
Thanks, Marlene. I tried to explain to Marlene the actual control cycle because it's very much linked to what we're talking about here in climate change as well. So just back to the topics we wanted to cover. Marlene talked about the collaboration between the various stakeholders. We're just trying to give here you an overview of all the stakeholders involved in the financial regulation of climate risk. This is UK specific. But I think it's trying to show the complexity and the interaction and the interrelatedness of the various stakeholders. Just one thing, as I engage with the topic, just understanding all the acronyms took me quite a long time, and I still need to sometimes just refresh. Is it on the next slide? Sorry, thank you, Marlene. There we go. Now you can see what I'm talking about. Those are some of the key stakeholders in the UK. So just to repeat, it's the complexity in the interrelation between all these stakeholders. So the governments have climate change and environmental policy objectives and commitments. You know, a big part of COP21 was that commitments that they've made. Now they need to set policies and initiatives to ensure that the country's financial system act consistent with these objectives that they have. It needs to be translated into climate risk and environmental regulation and standards by the relevant stakeholders. So if you look at the picture, just to give you an idea of all the stakeholders that's involved, you've got international forums, that's mostly cooperation and collaboration between central banks and the financial regulators. So there we have the NGFS, the Network for Greening the Financial System. You have the Financial Stability Board, the FSB. South Africa are members of both these organizations. The FSB's task is to strengthen the financial system and increase the stability of the international financial markets. They created and tasked the TCFD, created the TFC to create that framework around disclosure, which Marlene spoke about. It's widely used, as she said, all listed companies in the UK needs to disclose on that basis. It's the basis in Europe as well, so it's very widely adopted around the globe. The NGFS, also bank and supervisors, they produced the set of scenarios that even the Bank of England based their scenarios on. So they did a lot of around the scenario development. So the real aim is here is the international collaboration to get best practice, improve consistency, approach and knowledge sharing. It is not a national problem, it's a global problem, and a lot of companies are multinational. Therefore, the collaboration is really required. At a national level, this example shows you the impact of the central bank, the Bank of England, but then it's also the regulators, prudential and market conduct, that plays a role. In the UK, you've got consumer duty coming to the fore, and we're seeing it playing out. You know, it was quite clear that consumer choices and the ability to offer consumer choices around sustainability-approved kind of products is becoming more and more important, especially in Europe. Then you've got various bodies, so it's a complicated picture. You've got supranational regulators, you've got standard-setting bodies. You know, you've got EIOPA, which is the European Insurance and Occupational Pension Association. You've got the IAIS. You've got IFRS. Marlene spoke about the two standards that's expected under IFRS around climate change and sustainability. So there's a lot to get your head around, but I think importantly for insurance companies now is to say, what are the initiatives taken by the financial regulators around the globe? And there's a bit of a lead and lag as regulators catch up, but there's some common themes emerging. It's about setting clear supervisory expectations, very much regarding governance, risk management, and disclosures. Definitely continued regulatory engagement and expectations to see progress, and where there's not progress, expectation to put a plan in place to show how the capability gaps are going to be addressed. Stress test and scenario, this is not a mean reversion exercise. This is more like a regime change. So the past is not a good guide. And stress testing and scenario testing will definitely be required to see some of the sensitivity of the results or sensitivities of companies to potential risks in the future. It's also about reviewing the capital as a mitigating action. That is also key from a regulatory perspective. Now, let's just get back to what the Bank of England actually did in 2021. So they have annual exercises, but biannually they have an exploratory scenario. And in 2021, they centered that around climate. So it was not used for capital requirements. It was really to test the resilience of the UK. Marlene can change for me because I'm going to forget. Really test the resilience of the UK financial system. So the desired outcomes really was here to size financial exposures, to understand the challenges that businesses are facing, and improve firms' risk management. So they used five insurers, banks, and P&C companies. They targeted the largest five life insurers had to participate, so they said who had to participate. You can see the list there. And the three CBIS scenarios that was used, Marlene spoke about it, was the early action, late action, and no additional action. And you can see then how it translates into transition risk, limited if you don't take any action, high if you take a lot of action early on. Then there was also the physical risk. In the UK, it's very much the biggest physical risk really in the UK market is land flood risk. So it increased the later the action. So it looks at the temperature rises, but it also then looks at the sea level rises, which has got a huge impact on the physical risk then in the UK market. And then also the impact. So they looked at the GDP impact. Those graphs there just show the impact of GDP from 5 to 10 years, 10 to 15, and 25 to 30 years. So you can see where there's late action, there's a dip in the middle years, and then a gradual decline if no action is taken. So it just gives you an idea of what they try to achieve and how they approach it. And it was really much for banks, they focus on credit risk associated with lending activities with the emphasis of detailed analysis of risk to large corporate counterparties. So the CBIS exercise, interestingly enough, required banks and insurers to actually speak to their counterparts to gather the relevant data and understand the industries better. And then, of course, for insurers, it was much more about asset owners, being asset owners and the change in the value of the asset portfolios, but also then the impact of insurance claims. But mostly that is for the P&C insurers. Next slide. So these are the learnings from the CBIS exercise. So this was produced in 2022. A couple of organizations did a review of that they published, and then the Bank of England had a report where they updated on their focus areas in March this year. So just the learnings from this exercise. It is a drag on participants' performance. I don't think there's any surprise there. 10 to 15% is what they say, or around there. But it varies a lot based on the interpretation of the scenarios. There was no real concern around the solvency impact. They felt the industry should be able to cope from a solvency perspective. But I think the big thing that emerged is the collaboration required. And as Marlene also said, you need data from the real economy. So it's not about impact on just the financial sector. It impacts every aspect of the real economy as well. And clear collaboration is required if you want to improve the data quality. So the benefits of the exercise was very much similar to what we've seen with the TCFD framework, that enhanced capacity and awareness from a board level, senior management level, but throughout the organization. A lot of the work was done internally, so there was definitely a building up of capability around this. It was a challenging exercise from all I can get the feedback on. But there's definitely also now a greater integration of climate risk in every aspect of the of insurers from the governance perspective, from a risk management perspective, but also from a strategy perspective. There was quite a lot of challenges experienced, and it's worth reading about that and reflecting on that as we embark potentially on scenarios in the South African market. They did have, so it was a 30-year projection, but they used the fixed balance sheet assumption, which meant no mitigating actions were taken. So basically, you can't compensate for anything throughout the period, which distorted the results. The scope of the risk included, it focused on climate change, but we know there was some concern that there was not enough extreme kind of black swan events. You also need to consider this is climate change, but increasingly we're talking also about biodiversity loss and the interrelatedness of other sustainability risks that face organizations. Also the interaction between physical and transition risks, difficult to put through in a scenario, but that was not properly, you know, thoroughly considered in the view of many. Data dependency, it comes back to what Marlene has also said. It requires engagement and this really required, as I said, banks and life insurance to engage with their counterparts to get greater accuracy and coverage of information. So definitely a need to do a client outreach was encouraged by the regulator. But I think what emerged for me is also that deliberate data strategy by organization, not only in exposure data, but also the data they need to report on their own scope 3 upstream and downstream exposures. As I said, the data and the interpretation was the issue. Sometimes the estimated loss ratios for the same counterparty at 10 times higher rate, so 10 times difference in the estimated loss ratio. So clearly that needs a lot of consistency over time. And the central goal of all of this was also to share it internationally. So you can see a lot of usefulness coming out of it, but I think it's important for us to learn from this experience and see where the scenarios fell short. As I said, the Bank of England reported a couple of months ago just an update on climate-related risk and the regulatory capital frameworks. So they said that the insurers in the UK should just expect continued regulatory engagement and expectations, where they've set their expectations and companies will be expected to talk to those expectations and show their progress and address those capability gaps where they have them, which has been exposed also through the CBIS exercise. The requirement scenario and stress testing will remain. It's the only way to really assess the sensitivity of results. And I think it's the sensitivity of results that's more important than the actual outcome. And it's also the assumptions and disclosure about how the approach taken that is very important. They don't see a revolution of the climate regime, the capital regime, which was quite interesting, but rather evolution. Currently, they feel the framework is broadly appropriate, but further work needs to be done on that. But definitely not a revolution in the capital regime. I think a lot of insurers were happy to hear that. Then we often focus on insurers as asset owners. And my own question when I engage with this topic, this is a life seminar, is what's the impact on health and what's the impact on mortality? There's a lot of good work when I started reading done by the likes of, this is a graph that I got from Swiss Re, RGA, SCORE, those are the ones I've read, that really expand on these topics. I think what I got, what was quite interesting, is it's a muted impact globally in the insured markets. It's almost disappointingly so that where the most of the exposure for global reinsurance are, the impact on mortality is muted, sometimes even positive, because of the adaptability of those countries and the social impact. They've got strong enough healthcare regimes, they've got older populations that might even benefit from slightly warmer temperatures, etc. But I think if you go through this fan, which Swiss Re designed, if you look at climate change, there are the direct impacts and the indirect impacts, which I think is important. So the direct impacts is just, let me just go back. The direct impacts is, as we've said, I can't see the slides now, just give me a moment, extreme heat, wildfires, droughts. which will definitely have an impact. And then there's the indirect impacts with air pollution, airborne disease, etc. So that definitely will drive it. But then it's very the social impacts that is the key differentiator and that we expect to be a key differentiator in the South African market. It's the socioeconomic makeup of the population, the ability of healthcare to respond, and we have some examples of that under COVID to see the impact and the ability to respond on that. That will really determine the health impact on the population. We know who is most vulnerable, but the question is your exposure where it's vulnerable, and are the exposure there with populations that's able to adapt to the risk posed by climate change. So quite a mixed bag, but I think when we develop scenarios for Africa and South Africa, careful consideration will have to be given to how those scenarios can be applied in the South African context. That's the key take out I had from that. Then next slide is just to bring it back to say local relevance. What does it mean for actuaries in South African context? I think firstly to understand that this is a real economy problem. It's not an insurance problem. It affects every part of the economy. But there's some universal messaging that emerged that I think it's important to note. It's important to include it in your strategy development and apply your mind, as Marlene also alluded, it's applying the mind in terms of what's the risk, what can the impact be, what is the adaptability and what is the vulnerability to see what the real impact of that can be. And it's interrelated, so it will take a lot of iteration to refine that. But it's important to take that into account when you set your strategy. Data gathering, we talked about a data strategy and the importance of starting on that journey, especially also around exposure data. Definitely an opportunity. There's definitely companies being rewarded, especially in the UK and Europe, around being on the forefront. There's a big theme around litigation. It's quite scary if you see the number of litigations in the UK and Europe, also now against directors of insurance companies that's not implemented the climate risk strategy. So there is opportunity there. And then also leverage. There's many available free resources out there and many forums established to assist. So what I took from it engaging on the topic is just, as Marlene said, just start the journey. Educate yourself, get engaged, collaborate. There's lots of opportunities to collaborate. It is indeed a wicked problem. There is no end state. And I got some wise advice from one of the speakers on one of the podcasts to say, be cautious and be inquisitive, especially with the number of models available, indices available, just to be quite curious about what you use. And it's so much less about the results over this period, but about the assumptions you make and understanding the sensitivity of the results. So I need to do a bit of marketing for Ron. Call for volunteers. There is an ASSA committee on climate change. Lots of opportunities there to get involved. They were always happy to take more volunteers. As you can see, I mean, many of the topics we touched on requires many in-depth work that will be beneficial to the whole industry. And also just to note, I think that what I find quite important, there's a lot of talk, even if you listen more globally, not just in terms of the financial sector, that a lot of the work done by actuaries is actually quite useful for other sectors in the economy. The ORSA, the forward-looking nature, scenario analysis, modeling, all of those skills and capabilities is widely applicable to the work that other companies will also have to do around climate change. So as a student, I can share some of the learning resources. Pamela shared a lot of the South African resources, and I recommend that you could look in her presentation around resources available there. Speaking to one of the CROs of one of the UK companies, the UK insurance companies, their go-to source is that Climate Financial Risk Forum. There's some incredible guidance. Visit their website. There's a lot of good guidance. They've got underwriting guidelines on life insurance, PNC insurance. So really recommend. Very, very good output there. But there's a lot of other resources as well as you start looking through information. Quite a few podcasts I can also recommend for those that listen to podcasts. GARP has got a very good podcast. The episode they did recently on a review of 2022 podcasts I found quite insightful. It's good debates. It's a good challenge and interrogation of some movements around climate change and how the financial sector is responding. There's also an Institute and Faculty of Actuary one. I saw the ASSA. It's got a lovely feed on climate change that's updated quite regularly. And as I said, I did the Institute and Faculty's course on climate change. So I think that's the message we leave you with. This is a vast topic, but the most important thing that Marlene and I feel is just start engaging with it. You need to start somewhere. This is not a problem that's going to go away. It will be in the forefront, and I expect more and more focus to be over that over the few years to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elsa and Marlene. I think you've spent a lot of effort to put this very evolving topic into some practical considerations for us. We are running a little bit over, but I think we'll take one or two questions. So I don't see any online, but are there any questions in the room?
Thank you very much for that presentation. My question is, how will this result in practical changes in a company? For example, will this result in the company putting their aircon on off for two extra more hours a day in order to hit this target? Or shouldn't the money spent on creating this report rather be spent on putting solar panels on top of the roof? Isn't that a better use of the time and energy?
Hello. I suppose that's a good question, but it's, for me, it's not an either-or. It's not saying you either do the reporting or you do the greening of the building. So I think both are important.
Yeah, ultimately you need to report on it. So the more solar panels you put in and less dependent you are on coal energy, you will come through your reports. So it's both.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Not seeing any hands. We've got one online. So Peter Castle's, okay, I think it's just a quote, but Peter Drucker is often quoted as saying, you can't manage what you can't measure. So maybe that's a useful one to leave you with. Okay. I don't see any other questions. One last check around the room. But otherwise, thank you very much. Thanks again, Elsa and Marlene. And as Marlene is not a member of ASSA, we do have a small token of appreciation. So thank you for joining us today and presenting.
Thank you. Well.